Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome on into the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside diehard San Francisco Giants fan Thomas Carinante, who's probably devastated this morning that the Yankees ended their West Coast road trip facing Jordan Hicks, Logan Webb, and Blake Snell and came out of it with 3 wins. The Giants copped 0. Well, if you weren't already satisfied with the way that this West Coast trip had gone after they managed to take the first 2 series and recover from dropping the first Angels game to win the next 2 in exciting fashion and then relatively standard fashion, although Juan Soto bases clearing triple towards the end of that game. Not standard. I mean, that's pretty exceptional. Weird ground ball triple down the line. Doesn't happen every day. The Giants series was the coup de grace, the capper on an all-time road trip, and it had the series had everything. What'd you want? Aaron Judge's homecoming. Oh, is he going to shrink from the moment? Is he going to look like playoff 2022 ALCS Aaron Judge? No, he hits a 3-run home run to set the tone in the opener. He basically rips the Giants' hearts out piece by piece on a local radio station. Could not handle it. We'll talk about them in a little bit. Our new friends by the Bay, whose brains were scrambled with each Yankees in this series a little bit further. Had Cody Poteet stepping up and taking care of business on Saturday, and also included a Giancarlo Stanton home run. That seemed pretty notable. Helped build some distance, build a gap, and helped the Yankees to victory. Judge homered twice in the opener and then once again in the second game, by the way. And then, oh yeah, Juan Soto, that guy hit 2 homers, 1 in the first, 1 in the ninth. And the 1 in the ninth was pretty crucial against San Francisco Giants all-star closer Camilo Duvall, leading the Yankees to just again an all-around hell yeah of a sweep, a ripe cantaloupe of a sweep. Finding a lottery ticket on the ground and it says it's only a $10 winnings. You bring it to the guy and he's like, oh, you found my lottery ticket. Here's $1,000 from my pocket. Thanks for bringing that back to me. Found money, standout play, superstars being superstars, happy flight. The Yankees are going to be mercilessly hungover heading into their game tomorrow with the Twins. They get one day off. I think they got drunk enough on the plane that it's going to take more than 48 hours to clear that hangover. And guess what? I still think they're going to win the baseball game 9-4.
Who drinks on this team, though?
You don't think they're drinking on the plane?
I just don't know who boozes on this team. No one gives me those kind of vibes. Like, Soto is so...
Nasty Nestor?
Nestor might. I feel like Soto is the guy who's like, he can go out under any condition. Everybody will get wasted. He'll go out sober. He'll have himself a great time. He'll just be vibing in the club. Judge, like what? 1 high ball for the big guy, and then he's calling it. Stanton just doesn't strike me as a boozing guy.
I feel really bad doing this to you before tossing to you for an ad read, but like, you tell me Alex Verdugo doesn't drink.
So that, I'm talking about like the who's getting the crew to go out on a Sunday night after a sweep. It's Verdugo.
But
I was more so thinking like, who of the actual core of this team that's like, you know, no offense to Verdugo. I just don't know if he might not be here after this year and he's not like a core New York Yankees player over the last 5 years. Like, I don't see any of these core players, but Stroman's like into his chakra and all that. Yeah. I don't think he's putting any toxins in his body. So I would love to see like, you know, a good Wade Boggs situation where someone destroys 40 beers on a cross, on a cross-country flight, but I don't know what's happening here. I don't know what's going on.
Tommy Canley, I think, hit the airport. Hit the airport, airplane bathroom with a hammer, just going to town, and you wake up. End of the flight, Boone's like, what happened here? He's like, oh, no, Skip, I had a Phillips head. I just went to town. We're like, why? Why did you smash the toilet with a hammer? He goes, I got to break stuff, man. I just got to break stuff.
Tommy Canley was boozing right after the game.
Yeah. Exactly. We saw it.
Yeah, he had a beer in the Stone Cold Steve Austin's shirt, which I absolutely love.
Yes, and again, this was a Sunday afternoon in early June, so we're setting things up for potentially a very exciting second half of the season. If you're getting ahead of yourself as a Yankee fan, I'm not even going to caution you and tell you not to. Hey, enjoy the moment. Why wouldn't you? We all know this team is measured on postseason success, not regular season success, but even way more so than 2022, there does seem to be a lot of a foundation here for a remarkable end to the season. And there's no team in the AL that matches Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, the only team in baseball that does it. I mean, the Dodgers and Phillies, kind of, sort of. I mean, I would kick the Yankees offensive core over the Phillies, even though these are the two teams with the best record in baseball. I know what the Dodgers have. We're going to get a chance to take a look at it in person next weekend.
Wow.
But yeah, I would say, you know, don't go getting those trophy tattoos, but also don't stop yourself from feeling extremely joyful, because this team is delivering you reason after reason to do so. And Thomas Caronte, you have another reason.
Yeah.
7 minutes in, a new record for futility in delivering on our sponsors' wishes that would keep people happy.
Well, I mean, this is why they wait, right? Caesars is here, everybody. Caesars Sportsbook. They are looking for you because they want to cover your first bet up to $1,000. Unreal. New customers will get a second chance bet up to 1G when you sign up using our promo code YGY1000. Clarification here. That means if your first bet loses, you will get your full wager returned as a bonus bet up to 1,000. So if you bet 50, you get 50 back, and you lose a bet, you get 50 back, 100, so on and so forth, up to 1,000. You can bet a $1,000 bet on the Yankees. If they lose, you get a bonus bet back. You do it again, they win, double up. Life's easy, you know? Caesars Sportsbook also offers daily profit boosts as well as Caesars rewards credit on every wager, which can be redeemed for bonuses, sports tickets, and other VIP experiences. Signing up with our code YGY1000 not only covers your first bet, but it also gets you access to these fantastic this fantastic rewards program. So if you're going to join Caesars, go download the app, register with our promo code YGY1000, and make sure that first bet is covered. Again, up to $1,000. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Anybody watching right now, thanks for tuning in. I'm wearing my Giants hat. Why? Because we beat the absolute piss out of the Giants. Why do I own this hat? Thank you for asking as well. I collect baseball hats. I was a huge Barry Bonds fan as a kid.
Which current Yankees legends weren't huge Barry Bonds fans?
Exactly. So, and I also was a big Tim Lincecum fan, Madison Bumgarner fan, so it kind of extended. They were really my NL team for a really long – I mean, I would say – I don't know. Who do I root for in the NL now? I don't know anybody. I don't like anybody. Maybe it's still the Giants, but they're so bad now. They're like – they are like the nightmare version of what the Yankees could be. Big market team with all this history, with all this, recent success, but like they have built off of those world championships from 10, 15 years ago. And they just haven't capitalized on it at all. I don't know how or why that 107 win season in 2021 still blows my mind to this day. It doesn't make sense how they did it. But yeah, I'm wearing this because Giants fans need any semblance of a pick-me-up today, and I'm riding high as a Yankees fan. I'm having a good time. I am not letting anything get to me.
Oh, it's a trophy. Yeah, it's a trophy. You slice their heads off, now you get to wear their hats after a weekend of dominance. I would look, if you're a Giants fan, you're upset about this weekend's action, I would take your three championships since our last one, and I would take your Warriors championships, and I would take your Niners being successful every single year, and I'm sure the San Jose Sharks have nice smiles, but you live pretty nicely, and so bummer of a baseball team you got there right now. But I don't know if Aaron Judge was there's this narrative creeping now that he wasn't ever seriously considering the Giants. I don't think that's true. I think he was very ready for the Yankees to let him down in contract talks, and he was more than happy to go to the Giants. They were his second choice, and if the first choice had screwed things up, which they almost did, I think he would have gone there. He was considering the Giants more realistically than the Padres, who outbid the Giants and the Yankees. So I don't think it was some sham. I just think the Yankees came to play eventually, and I think Judge's reps played it perfectly, and I think he's probably glad he didn't have to choose the Giants, but he would have relatively enthusiastically chosen them. And if the Yankees had continued to disrespect him, he would have chosen them with a chip on his shoulder. As we all know now, that looks pretty good, because he has a chip on his shoulder, and he's had one. He doesn't want to be the only ringless Yankees captain since Don Mattingly. And Mattingly and Judge are the only ringless Yankees captains at this point in time, although I don't think Roger Peckinpah had a ring at the start of the 20th century. I think we go back to the front of the list. We got some ringless Highlanders, but it's just Mattingly and Judge right now. That's a lot of pressure, and he's got that chip on his shoulder. He made a comment yesterday saying, I've been here plenty of times where we got the opponent's closer coming in. We just go 1-2-3 in that situation, but this team is different. He's right. And it's not like he wasn't a part of those teams that went 1-2-3 in similar situations, but now he is part of a team that they hurt him this offseason. We know he wanted Alex Verdugo, and we didn't. We thought, okay, lefty bat, outfield for sure, but Alex Verdugo, really? Judge advocated for him. The front office listened, and now he's the one facing two different lefties in the same at bat who prospers with a two-strike double into the right field corner to tie a game in the middle innings, and turns to the dugout and hypes him up with some let's goes and barks as he runs to first, as he rounds the bag. The Yankees haven't had that in forever, and Judge knows that right now his captaincy is incomplete, and he might be the greatest leader in the world, as Andy Martino asserts in his new book, The Yankee Way, but it hasn't manifested in titles. It's hard to win titles. Yes. He also hasn't done it. Yes. Two things can be true. So he goes out, helps him, leads them to Verdugo, and we have no idea how much he pushed for Juan Soto, but we do know that everybody woke up at the same time and realized, hey, we are the Yankees. If the best lefty hitter in the world is available, we should go ahead and get him. And then when the internet flames us and says, you're going to miss that pitching depth, we're going to go ahead and say, no, we won't, because the internal guys all the way from Rodon on a bounce back to Luis Gil returning from injury to Marcus Stroman, our low-cost acquisition in place of Blake Snell, which he turned down how much money from the Yankees this offseason before we pivoted? Oh, my God, he's been on the IL twice, and it's June 3rd. All the way to Cody Poteet, who threw Saturday's game. They give credit to the Yankees. It took them way too long to realize, hey, one of the biggest stars in the world is available. We should just go and get him and not care about the cost at all. But they were dead on the money with regard to why do we need to pay for more pitching exactly? Why do we need to bring in a co-ace in Blake Snell while we wait for Rodon to bounce back when we have all of this talent in our system and could get a guy like Stroman to get him in, fill that gap better, arguably, than the $100+ million more expensive option? We've gotten on the Yankees a lot past couple of years, and I think Judge and the front office changed a lot of things with regard to the way they go about the offseason, with regard to communication between the analytics team and the guys in the dugout, with regard to valuing chemistry. But they hit the nail on the head in terms of pitching depth. They had more than we thought they did. They had more than all the angry analysts who said they need to go out and grab a Sneller or Montgomery thought they did. And the one thing that they held firm on, and they were completely vindicated, was that they had enough pitching in the system. Because even now that they lose Clark Schmidt, which is something we got to talk, he's going to be gone for quite a while. This is a lat strain. And Thomas, your favorite fraud, Luis Severino, is somehow involved in this story too. They said on the broadcast yesterday that Clark reached out to Seve for discussions on how to rehab from this injury. And Seve said, whoa, I mean, first of all, take it slow, because whatever they tell you.
Don't take any advice from him.
You got to make sure to take it slow, because if you come back too soon, you'll feel it. This is the same injury that he yelled at the Yankees when they put him on the 60-day IL and showed him a clock for. Hey, here's a calendar, and if you don't understand a calendar, here's a clock. And he was like, this is bullshit. And now he's like, hey, listen to the team, they have your best interest at heart. Come on, Seve.
You also said it felt like he got shot. Was that the same injury?
That's a good question.
Actually, no, that was last year. I'm sorry, this the calendar thing was 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I actually might be thinking of the wrong injury too, because the calendar thing was
No, I think it was a lat strain.
It was a lat strain that summer, summer 22.
He was felled by multiple lat strains. I know the one from this year, the one from last year, he said he felt like he got shot. The one the year prior when he was going to take, I think the projected timeline was 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the Yankees put him on the 60-day IL and he got all pissed off. And they're like, no, like, this is math. Like, mm-hmm. the earliest you can return is in, you know, I think like the best case scenario was 42 days.
Yeah, it was a low grade right lat strain in summer 22.
Yeah. Whatever, go on.
Well, either way, I mean, we're going to lose Clark Schmidt for a while. It hurts, undoubtedly. He was an all-star level pitcher. He's probably the second best pitcher on this team. But for anybody who wants to, the depth looks thin right now. It does. And if they're tested beyond this five-man unit and have to go to Yoendris Gomez, then yeah, it'll be very thin. And Gerrit Cole's return will certainly help a lot. And bumping Poteet back to the sixth starter will certainly help a lot. But so far, they've believed in their guys. They showed faith in this weird skeleton crew. And we all laughed at Cashman for not knowing Cody Poteet's name and all that stuff this offseason. But he's is he any more than a 4-5? I'm not going to get up on a pedestal and say Cody Poteet could be Luis Gil if he just ate a banana every once in a while. But no, he looked fucking incredible in the role. Change of pace, righty, command, control, setting a lineup. Completely controlling an opposing lineup for a five inning span. He gave up a 2-run home run. Just that's basically the only flash. And if they can get Cole back, then we might not even really miss Clark Schmidt, which is an absurd thing to say considering he's been the second best pitcher on this roster. Credit to the Yanks. All the things that we saw this weekend: Judge homecoming vengeance, the Stanton homer, the rally against Doval, Soto making himself. It's becoming ridiculous to say, hey, blank check this man. But, like, actually kind of have to blank check this man at this point. The Yankees being right and not skipping a beat after losing Schmidt and I would say being outmatched on paper in all three of these pitching matchups and winning all three of these games, credit to the Yankees. They knew their own pitching farm better than we did and better than a lot of commenters did.
Yeah, can't. Look, Yankees have effed up a lot over the years, but like I thought ahead yesterday after the comeback and I thought to myself, I was like, you know what? I don't know how, like I don't even want to manifest it or put it out there, but like if we ran into a buzzsaw in the first round of the playoffs and lost this year, like I couldn't even be mad. And this team has they are proving at this point that they have the energy and they have the ability to get by anybody. It's just now going to be a matter of time and consequence. And how often have we seen that burn other teams? You know, the Braves get into the playoffs with one of the best rosters you will ever see the last 2 years, and they're dumped in the first round. The Dodgers, how many times do they have a star-studded team that has depth and is ready for the occasion, bounced in the first round multiple times over the last few years? And sometimes it's just the way it unfolds and you get a bad break. I think the Yankees I genuinely think they're going to go far this year, but from what I've seen from this team in the first 2 months, like I have minimal complaints. I understand that there's every roster is imperfect. You're not going to be able to solve every single problem at every point in time when each time somebody goes down, but pretty damn good job. This is the best team in baseball right now with all of the roster issues they've experienced, from Gerrit Cole to now Clark Schmidt to DJ LeMahieu to Gleyber Torres and Anthony Rizzo really not being good this year at all and weighing down the team, but everybody else is picking it up, to the bullpen being very much incomplete and still getting the job done. Couple of questionable decisions, you know, with the Ron Marinaccio DFA and things like that. But overall, don't know how you can complain, and don't know how you can even take issue with the energy with this team, because even when, you know, a guy like Giancarlo Stanton disappears for five games in a row and strikes out eight times on this road trip, he comes back on Saturday night and hits a massive home run that gives them the lead. And then he tacks on a fucking insurance run last night. That was yesterday. That was absolutely massive. Yeah, every time you go into the ninth inning with a one run lead, it is the vibe is completely different than when it is with two or three runs. So like everybody's it's truly a team at this point. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Like everybody knows their role. Everybody steps up when they need to. There's, I think, a greater cohesion, a greater understanding of the larger picture and the larger goal. And like, I don't have any complaints until I guess I have a complaint, right?
Yeah, I still have a trade deadline to get mad at. And I know everybody who does want this podcast to get angry at certain points. And I'm sure we will again, because the baseball season's long, baseball season's difficult, and the June schedule we'll talk about. They're going to have a lot of chances to prove themselves these next couple weeks. Yeah. Good to get off to a 2-0 start in the month, because, hey, you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. And we'll talk about all that. But, hey, moment you were happiest in this series. I mean.
Oh, mama. Oh, mama.
Juan Soto with like an instant Yankees classic yesterday. And the more that time goes by, again, blank check, like it's just the easiest. Like, of course, usually you'd rail against that. If you saw the whole fan base being every time the fan base is like, pay him whatever he wants, I don't care. The businessman in you wants to be like, but there actually is an amount that you shouldn't pay this person. Right? if like $900 million over 90 years stopped Juan Soto, like, you know, all the deferred money doing the Ohtani, like if you could get him to forego free agency by overpaying him by $400 million right now, and then they did that, I would be like, wait, what the hell? Don't do that. But Juan Soto is definitely the closest I've ever come to just kind of being like, I actually don't care anymore. Yeah, blank check, whatever it takes. Like, they cannot let this guy out of their sights, because transformative doesn't even begin to describe it. And when we were coming up with our rosiest expectations for this season before it started, it was basically like, hey, I don't know if this is true, but I really think people are underrating how much Juan Soto will transform the whole offering. People are acting like the Yankees have obtained an all-star lefty bat to play right field, defensively deficient, takes his walks. They're sort of looking at the profile without looking at the aura of Juan Soto, the teenager who took Justin Verlander deep in the World Series, you know, the instantaneous Nationals playoff hero lineup. They were just sort of looking at, yeah, good bat, lineup lengthener. Hey, they should get Adam Duvall too. Like, people were, you know, weaving it into the context of the rest of the offseason. Well, they still need this and they still need a starter, but Juan Soto was a good start. And Robert Murray was telling me, you know, was going at this on the Baseball Insiders for a while. Like, I think Juan Soto is somehow becoming underrated, because people were genuinely saying, good fit, good addition, love it. Not sure they had to give up Johnny Brito and Drew Thorpe. A bit of an overpay. There's just no overpaying someone like Juan Soto and what he can bring that doesn't – what he brings on the page – but also when he brings the hops right off the page. And so far, that best case scenario and that suspicion that, hey, maybe getting Juan Soto is going to be more important than just adding a big bat, a superstar even. This is even a – we've seen the Yankees add superstars who haven't fit in this well before. So blank check, I don't know, but I'm like 90% of the way there. You can't lose him. And the more that time goes by, the more I just find the idea that they're going to lose him to a team like the Mets. In March, it sort of sounded – okay, I mean, yeah, Steve Cohen outbids Hal Steinbrenner by $100 million, and Soto has a less than spectacular – like, look, if Steve Cohen paid $600 million for Soto after he hit 264 with 32 home runs and 88 RBI, and the Yankees went 89 and, you know, 73, like, yeah, okay. Like, I could see that happening. The Mets want to, you know, transform their lineup by overpaying him and giving him this absurd amount of money after his fit in the Bronx was imperfect and he was looking to reset the market. And Hal would say something like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously we love the player, but it didn't quite work out the way it was. I mean, after what we're seeing in April, May, early June, like, I don't think there's any way that the Yankees brass could evaluate this and say that we're okay moving on from this player. And I don't think there's any way that Juan Soto can look and say, let me get 20 more million dollars out of the Mets. Like, what did they have, a reliever throw a glove at the fans? Yeah, let's see if we can squeeze another $15 million out of those guys. Like, it just sounds more and more ridiculous as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Boras said it perfectly last week. He said that there is a different financial evaluation when it comes to a player like Juan Soto, when it comes to a player like Shohei Ohtani. The contract does not matter. It's what the player brings. Juan Soto makes this entire team better. So on top of doing that, he's an international star. I think the biggest argument for players, taking contracts in New York is that picture whatever money you're losing in taxes, whatever money you're losing, you're leaving on the table from a bigger offer out there. You're making it back times 10 in endorsements. So just like fucking do it. Yeah, I agree. I don't know what short of a $1 billion offer. I don't know what's going to stop the Yankees here. Anyway, that yesterday's moment was amazing. Saw that live, was out at a restaurant. And got to witness that. So that was cool. My happiest moment, though, however, because I did watch a very, very good portion of the series. I fell asleep on Saturday night.
Fell asleep on Saturday and gave us the win, by the way, because I was watching the Rangers and the Yanks were up 4-0. Sad about the Rangers. Turn the game on, becomes 4-3. I watched them wriggle out of some stuff. Good work from Poteet. But again, the game's getting tighter. And I go, you know what? I hope they win. I don't know if they will, but clearly watching sports tonight is turning sports to shit. So see you guys in the morning, win or loss, whatever. I'll take a good road trip. And then you guys are welcome, because then they pull away in the late innings because your boy was taking some
Z's. Sometimes it works. Sometimes you are the problem.
Sad when it works.
Not you, but like
no, sometimes you. Me, sometimes anybody. If you
sometimes
feel like
look in the mirror.
If you
look
feel like you're the problem and you feel like, well, that's crazy. I can't possibly be the problem. I regret to inform you that you are, and you have to stop watching.
Anyway, my happiest moment was on Friday, Judge getting mercilessly booed, which is just hilarious because it's like, is this a booable guy? I don't know.
I don't get people hate Judge and I don't get it at all. But I'm not people.
It's like, it's not like he turned down the Giants. It's not like he left the Giants, you know? If he left the Giants for less money with the Yankees, that would be a booable offense. He had built up an MVP caliber, you know, start to his career with the New York Yankees and was the New York Yankee of the last, what, since Derek Jeter retired.
Yeah,
he's the New York Yankee over that span. So it's like he just stayed with the same team that he was probably always going to stay with for a little bit less money after he got the owner to throw in an extra $45 million. Like, whatever. Nonetheless, I get it. He's not on your team. He's dominating. He's literally the modern day version of Barry Bonds, and you're not reaping any of the rewards. Boo him. But Judge gets booed every time he's at bat, and that homer in the third inning. Holy shit. Again, probably that's the Giants' best starter right now in Jordan Hicks. He came into that one with a 2.3 ERA, leaves that one with a 2.7 ERA after getting knocked around. Judge hit two homers in that one, but I love the response to that type of stuff. And look, I'm not against the fan backlash. I love action like this. I love people talking shit. I love there being a back and forth. I love there being responses, but that made me happy because, like, Judge is a nice guy. Judge is not, to me, a booable offender on the outside looking in, unless you're a Red Sox fan or an Orioles fan, which I can get. Giants, we're going to play you 3-4 times a year. The games aren't going to matter. Okay, sure. Two homers, three homers on the series. Thanks and see ya.
Well, it's just very funny. Obviously, Roger Clemens leaves the Red Sox and goes to the Jays and then goes to the Yankees. Like, Red Sox fans for Clemens' first start in Boston are like, let's get liquored up. Let's get there early. We got to make this guy feel the pain. Aaron Judge, like, you imagine San Francisco residents being like, dude, we got to get blitzed for the Yankees on Friday. We got to tell Aaron Judge that he shouldn't have received a counteroffer. He shouldn't have enjoyed his tour so much of the stadium. Like, what? And then, so he doesn't ultimately go there, but he definitely heavily considered it, and he is from San Francisco, and he probably, like, I don't know. Couldn't you see Aaron Judge pulling a Jeter in retirement, like getting into the Giants ownership group in some capacity? Like, is that ridiculous? He seems to have a lot of love for San Francisco, and then Giants fans are still like, let's make him freaking miserable this weekend. And then he shows up and is like, I'm going to homer pretty much off the bat. I'm going to homer a couple more times. On Sunday, I'm going to start stealing bases. And the Yankees have only been here once during his career in 2019. He was injured at that point in time, and it was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, look, this is a tough ballpark to attract slugging superstars. It's quite large. Soto and Aaron Judge made it look pretty manageable this weekend.
Pretty hilarious. Soto went to the deepest part of the ballpark twice.
Twice. And, like, the second one was just, like, it does shows that it is a deep ballpark and tough to home run. Because the second one, I was like, conservatively, that one looks like it's hit 540 feet. And then it only kind of snuck into the standing room area on top of that big old wall, but they made it look pretty easy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hey, here's a pointless, outdated chunk of this podcast that I could read that I wrote in the seventh inning yesterday. Hey, what was the moment you were most bummed? For me, it was when DFA Nis Santana made Alex Verdugo a footnote in the finale. Okay, loser. Unsung hero of this series, maybe. I'm going to go Scott Boris.
Ooh.
The absolute legend for demanding too much money for Blake Snell. And thank you, because now we have Cody Poteet in the mix. Yeah, I don't know. Nothing feels odder than that. March was 2.5 months ago, and it feels like 300 years. When we were, like, waiting on Barstool personalities who claimed that Yankees and Snell were hammering out the final details of the, like, Marty Mush standing by his sources. Still standing by on that one, by the way, King, if you got something. But Blake Snell, I don't know, he looked passable yesterday. Velo wasn't there. Looked a little hefty. Am I crazy? Got his ERA under 10, so that's big. His whip is still hanging out around 2. He's made 6 starts. And the one time he really tried to get the velo up, he hurt himself and had to walk off the mound and leave the game mid-at-bat. So shout out to the Yankees again. You know, I gave him credit earlier. I give him credit again. You made the right pitching decisions. Anyone who thought we were going to get through this year with the 1-5 that we had, and then we just weave Garrett Cole in, and then all of a sudden we have 6 healthy starters all year and nothing ever changes. I mean, obviously someone was going to get hurt. Clark Schmidt does. It's a little bit more major than you'd hope for a bump in the road injury. But, you know, obviously a rotation is never seamless opening day to end of season. You're always going to have to go through these bumps and bruises. But the idea that we would have had to insure against these bumps and bruises by paying $100, $120, $140 million for someone as volatile as Blake Snell when we have better fits for the system at home and people with fewer burdens of expectation. We've already got a Rodon in there with a big burden of expectations, trying to come back from injury, trying to find his sea legs again. The idea that we had to sign Blake Snell and that we had Yankee fans refreshing Twitter till 2 a.m. that whole week and then going to bed being like, maybe tomorrow will be Snell Day. Just, nothing is more ridiculous in retrospect. And pretty symbolic on Sunday to see he was fine. He threw 100 pitches in under 5 innings, and then he reached back for a little something extra, and he hurt himself for the second time in a couple of weeks. So I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I still would have supported a Snell signing. I still will stand. I'm going to be a nice guy because I'm usually not a nice guy. I'm going to stand by the fact that no spring training has massively fucked up Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, as we're seeing in the numbers right now. But I would agree that I like where we're at this moment. I like the Stroman deal. I love the energy that he brings to the rotation. I love the tranquility that he brings to the mound and how he's helped bring the starting rotation closer together as a unit. I don't know if Blake Snell is capable of that. Don't really, you know, I haven't really had a ton of exposure to Blake Snell. Where was he? Rays, then Padres, now Giants. Yeah. Rays, everybody is just a cog in the machine, so you don't really get a gauge on their personality.
Yeah.
And then far removed from us in San Diego and now San Francisco. I would still take the talent, but it is what it is. I'm happy with where we're at. Feel for the guy, though, because that's a tough start to the season, and now he's going to have to pick up that option because he ain't hitting free agency this year with those numbers. No one's paying that. unsung hero for your boy. I'm going Giancarlo Stanton. He deserves a little bit of love. Very, very tough stretch after he homered that first night against the Padres last Friday when they all just went boom, boom, boom in a row. In one of the probably the coolest inning in modern day Yankees history. He proceeded after that to go 0 for 20. I'm sorry, 1 for 20 with 8 strikeouts. So that was his final two games of the Padres series, and then his series against the Angels. Faced bad pitching, couldn't capitalize on any of it. Then you have Saturday night, 2 for 4 with that cushion 2-run homer in the what was it, the 8th inning, I think, after Verdugo tripled.
Big one. Again, that's the one that I specifically helped along by sleeping, so you're welcome. Yeah. So 7th versus 8th, I believe it was the 8th.
It was the 8th, yeah. So Verdugo triples, brings in Judge to make it a 5-3 game, and then Stanton hits a laser to make it 7-3.
And that's a two-out hit for Verdugo, too, by the way. Yeah. Again, over and over and over again with this guy, Verdugo. Like, the most opportune times.
Verdugo could very well have been – Verdugo has gotten so much attention this year and positive attention, in my opinion. He hasn't been dragged at all. Even when he went through that tough stretch, like, nobody said shit. His batting average dropped to, like, .240. Nobody said anything. It's because he's still he's playing tremendous defense, covering so much ground out there that fans are so appreciative of that after what we've seen at the corner outfield spots over the last couple of years. And he's just a great person. You see him active all over dugout, post-game interviews, whatever it is. So Verdugo, you could chill this week. I know you've had a big series and a big road trip, but it's Stanton's turn. That home run on Saturday to make it 7-3 and really just like lift all the pressure off. Cause again, 5-3 is a different game with the Giants have two more times to come up to at bat. Very different feel. 7-3 kind of buries them. And then 2-out ground rule double yesterday to bring in the run to make it 7-5. That's massive. In so many other times in these Yankees rallies, you know, someone gets the one big hit, right? And then it's like 2 quick outs. No, you don't hear a thing. Quick 3-pitch strikeout. No one hears a thing.
Yeah.
You got to keep this stuff going because you need all the runs you can get, especially in this day and age, especially with how crazy fucking extra innings are now with the ghost runner. Giancarlo Stanton coming up big in those two moments. I know they weren't really intrinsic to the comebacks, but they were clearly key in helping the bullpen relieve the pressure, helping the team take that exhale. And that I think was a huge overlooked moment in the sweep.
I'm going to zag a little bit on the bullpen stuff too. I feel like the one complaint you're going to get from people is bullpen mismanagement or some such in this series. I didn't see it that way at all this time around. Look, the team
what was
is
the complaint? Who complained?
I saw some complaints about bullpen. Why Dennis Santana for 2 innings? And I did see somebody say the bullpen was rested yesterday. I would disagree with that assertion.
No.
They used everybody in the Saturday night game. Holmes.
He could have went Luke Weaver, I guess.
If you really want to bring Weaver back,
he went after 2 1/3 on Friday.
Multiple innings on Friday. Yeah, I mean the heart of the matter here is they just don't quite have the horses yet, and. Dennis Santana has done the impossible for me, moved ahead of Michael Tonkin on the DFA pecking order. I would rather DFA Dennis Santana than Michael Tonkin. Kooky bananas that could possibly happen. But that's just, I don't know. I mean, they had to fight to the finish line after Nestor couldn't get through 5 innings yesterday. Santana gets through the 5th. I'm fine with Santana in the 6th. I'm not going to Canely back-to-back days. I'm not going to Weaver that early in the game, and I don't really want to go to him at all. I'm not going to Holmes middle innings. I'm not going to Hamilton back-to-back days. So you don't have the guys. Ron Marinaccio is not up. Cody Morris is already down. You don't have the guys. So I wish we had the guys. I think that the only thing this team needs, Scott Efros back. Okay, again, maybe no consider. We'll see. We'll see. You get here when you get here, man. But be aggressive at the deadline or ahead of the deadline. If you wanted to be aggressive right now, I wouldn't tell you to stop. I would say, yeah, go ahead and get some bullpen guys because the 6th, 7th, 8th, not totally locked down for me. I would love some insurance against – I don't want Clay Holmes going 2 out of every 3 games in a series either if he doesn't have to. Glad he did, but hey – I thought Boone managed the bullpen well in this series. I just think the bullpen's not all that good, and they're going to have to win some blowouts at some point, although it may not be June because June's tough. Hey, forgotten moment, Anthony Volpe's triple against Duvall to start the scoring in the 9th. I know not, obviously, you're not going to forget, the first run scoring play of a comeback ninth inning, but it looked exactly like his triple against Emmanuel Clase in the Guardians game that they did not win, the series finale there when the infield started fumbling balls in the extra innings. He's evolving to the point where I've now seen him take 100, you know, bearing in on his hands to the right center field gap against the league's elite closers twice in a 2 month span. And I'm not surprised by it anymore. I'm like, oh yeah, that's one of the things that he's got in his tool bag. Yeah. You know, he could just do that. You know, 100 in on the hands going out into the right center field gap. I would call it Jeterian if I wasn't worried I'd sound like an asshole. So I won't say that. I definitely never said that. And if you splice the audio, you can't make me say that. But it's interesting that he's now done it twice against people who, like Judge said, in previous years, I would be like 5-3 against Duvall, bottom of the lineup. Glaber and Trevino starting this off. Yeah, no, we're good. Nice try. And they just sort of, not only did they come back with just one out in the inning. I also want to note Aaron Judge catching the final out of the game as an exclamation point in his hometown sweep. So much about the Yankees has been cosmically bad for the last like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 years. I think I'm going to Twitter thread every moment that's just cosmically good as it happens from here on out. El Duque showing up to Luis Gil breaking El Duque's rookie strikeout record was the one where I was like, that's very 1999. That doesn't really happen anymore. And then Judge going the whole series. It's like we always talked about, especially in 2021, the Yankees go out on a limb, do something interesting, instigate, and they don't get the last laugh. They never get the last laugh. They do the, ooh, it's too cold in here, Astros thing. And then the Astros have the biggest comeback of the season against them in the ninth inning. They're just, we would hop on these podcasts all the time and be like, first two games of the series were cool. Third one was embarrassing in a whole new way I never saw coming. Now the cosmic tide is turning a little bit. The arms of history are bending back to embrace the 24 Yankees a bit. And yeah, Judge catching the final out. It's just one of those moments that makes you go, oh, yeah, so this whole series was all about Judge. And then he has the final word. And he grabs that ball and says, this is over. I mean, yeah, just it sort of feels – I'm going to keep an eye on those moments that feel a little bit old school.
Yeah, for me, how about Michael Tonkin yesterday, dude?
Mr. Tonkin.
The Tonkin truck, as they're calling him. Mm-hmm. Two innings, scoreless, 30 pitches – gets the Yankees to the ninth without further damage, which the rest of the bullpen couldn't, even Nestor Cortez couldn't do. Nestor Cortez, another bad day. Dennis Santana, even worse. Victor Gonzalez came in there to clean up the mess. But then you get Michael Tonkin because you're sitting there and you're like, you know what, man? All right. We had the Verdugo moment. Verdugo doubles down the line. Those two runs score after Hunter Wendelstedt rings up Judge on the check swing, which I thought was a fine call.
Sure.
I'm not going to argue with it. It's a check swing. We argue all the time. Isn't a check swing just a fucking swing anyway? So whatever. And it was right at the plane. It's a tough call to make. He rung him up. It wasn't anything egregious, but you have the flashbacks of him ejecting Aaron Boone for the fans saying, let's go home plate. Let's go home plate.
Hey, that's out of line.
Yeah. And then Hunter Wendelstedt puts on – it was at the end of April. He puts on this giant charade pretending like the larger conversation has to do with Aaron Boone keeping the Yankees in control. He's responsible for the New York Yankees, so he's the first to go. No, actually, that's not how it works. Actually, it works like whoever is responsible for the – you don't eject Aaron Boone for a player telling you to fuck off, do you?
No. Rarely.
You eject the player. The player's gone. So fans immediately revisited that, and they're like, oh, Hunter Wendell's here, he is again trying to screw us. Then you have Verdugo double with two outs to bring the two runs home. So it's like, all right, umpire controversy averted. And then Dennis Santana comes out for the next inning after picking up the mess in the fifth inning it was for Cortez. Hits the number nine hitter with two outs. Next at bat, turns the lineup over. Leadoff hitter gets a single, drives in two runs. It's 5-3, and you're like, whatever, we tried.
Whatever.
We did
whatever.
What we had to do. We tried. We got a skeleton crew of a bullpen. We don't want to overuse these guys in a losing effort. Offense is having a little bit of trouble today, whatever. Tonkin keeps the game within reach at 5-3. Yankees do their thing in the ninth. Clay Holmes comes in. Game over, my friend. But you can't overlook those two scoreless innings, because how many times has a reliever come in, and an unqualified reliever come in, to either make the deficit worse or – you know, make a narrow game turn into a blowout. Tonkin, I think has settled in nicely and could actually be valuable for like you said, he's above Dennis Santana in the pecking order right now.
Yeah. And a lot of people are just going to continue memeing him to death because of that Milwaukee game when your jaw's on the floor. Like, why am I looking at Michael Tongan right now?
His fault. It's everybody else's fault.
Yeah. I mean, he's been passable. And again, Yankee fans are just looking. They've only lost 19 games so far this year. So every loss is now getting treated with like increased, incensed, like laser focus on all the moments that led to the loss as if you're not allowed to lose any games. And yeah, some of them have been bad. And the Clay Holmes blown save against the Mariners was as bad as a loss can really get at this point in time, especially for a team that is, again, 42-19 at this juncture. But the record has led to some over analysis of some games that otherwise you'd be like, yeah, I mean, that happens in a long season. Every loss is special now because they don't lose all that much. The stat yesterday, it said they were 2-15 and now 3-15 in games that they trailed after eight. You're like, oh, man, so they don't win that many games. They trail after eight. And then you think about it and you're like, they've only trailed 18 games after eight innings. It's June. So there's a lot to like about what we've got going on here. I would call Marcus Stroman an unsung hero in this series, too.
Yeah.
Just because of the timing, like, the Friday night game is obscured by some dramatics on Saturday night and obviously some all-time Juan Soto show-stealing moments. And even Stroman's own start was overshadowed by Judge. But it's like he took personal offense the other couple weeks ago when we were talking about which Yankees might be in the All-Star rotation. Like, Kiel, Schmidt, and then, hey, maybe Rodon, probably not. You know, name recognition, you never know. We just totally left Stroman out because he was, like, in the high 3.8s, 3.9s. We're like, hey, very good. You know, not quite.
And he labors. He always labors.
It was a lot of five innings with four walks at that point. It was like, all right, I mean, you know, he's getting the job done, but I'm not going to write home about him. He's not going to make the All-Star team. It's fine. All of a sudden, ZRA is it. Clark Schmidt's not making the All-Star team.
Really?
Stroman bumped Clark Schmidt off the All-Star discussion. Yep. Pretty nefarious of him. But just kidding. But 2.73 ERA, 12 starts. His last couple starts have been as dominant as anybody's starts have been all year. He's firmly in that conversation as well. So shout out to Marcus Stroman. We have not forgotten you. Most surprising moment, I guess, Judge not hitting the big glove in left field with a homer by the end of the series. He's a fucking slacker, and I will never forgive him for it. Honestly, most surprising moment, you just go down the line. I mean, the whole fact that Verdugo was able to wake them up in the middle of Sunday's game, the Soto home run itself, the Volpe hit. I mean, it was all surprising based on what we've seen from this team, this franchise, this group of guys, but it felt preordained. I wasn't really surprised by a single moment. I was just very pleasant. You know, the grin didn't leave my face, but I wouldn't have been shocked if they'd phoned it in yesterday. They had every right to, and then the fact that they didn't, I was like, I'm also not surprised by the fact that they weren't satisfied. It all sort of feels in line with the team's narrative.
Ooh, surprise. You weren't surprised. My surprising moment, you weren't surprised by Jose Trevino beating out that double play.
Yeah, you know, I guess I was.
Holy fuck. I was sitting there. I was like, oh, well, you know, and I felt bad for Gleyber because I was like, ah, Gleyber, man, like tough, really everything. Like Gleyber still, again, call me, anybody who's out there who wants to talk about this. Gleyber Torres is still not good this year. Splice the stats. He's getting a couple hits here and there. A, they're meaningless, and B, they're not contributing to anything, but he gets that hit in the top of the ninth yesterday, and you're like, okay, get something going. Gleyber, nice piece of hitting, poked it right through the middle, and then Trevino grounds out, and you're like, oh, well, this is a double play. Somehow he beats it out. That continues the inning. That allows for the comeback to happen. So holy hell. Positive there. He turned on the burners because he knew that was, you know, that was going to essentially be the end of the game if he didn't break it up. But I was just doing some math because I was going through the box scores for like the first time intently because I didn't feel the need to go through the box scores. You want to know why? Because I felt good. And when I feel good, I don't need to look at stats. I don't need to dive into things too closely. I don't need to start making excuses for people. You know, I just don't. The vibes are good. Everybody's overall, like the team is playing well. So I don't need to look at one specific player and be like, this is your fault. What's going on over here? I don't need to do that yet because it's not costing us games. Not a big issue, but holy hell, the bottom of this lineup. DJ LeMahieu, I understand he's back, so he's going to need some time to catch up. Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres, catching situation. Somebody do something. Somebody simply do something. You have Friday night, or I'm sorry, Friday night, Rizzo went 2-for-4, which was solid. He scored a run, but you have the bottom of the lineup go a total of 3-for-15 with a run scored. That's the best day that they had. Then you have Rizzo, Torres, Wells, LeMahieu go 2-for-16 with a run scored on Saturday. And then yesterday you have LeMahieu, Rizzo, Torres, Trevino go 2-for-17 with a run scored. That, what is that? That's not even, that's 2, 2, and 3. So that's math, 7 hits in just under 50 at bats. No. Answer is no. Can't have the lineup top heavy like this in terms of the production. It's not sustainable. The whole point of acquiring all these players was so the lineup would be lengthened, so there would be production in the 7, 8, 9 holes. Again, not asking for somebody to bat 350, not even ask somebody to bat 300, but can't be doing this. So if anybody is this should be more so filed under moment you might have missed. The reason I'm filing under moment that's most surprising is because we're not talking about it. And I'm surprised by that because not only us, but everybody else grills this team whenever there's an inefficiency, whenever there's an inconsistency, whenever there's a some sort of pitfall. And we're ignoring it right now, which I think is great. It's a privilege. Remember, it is a privilege to ignore that. So we're here. We're thankful. We're saying grace before dinner, but that this has to be fixed.
I mean, DJ LeMahieu has no RBI yet. I mean, I'm not saying that.
He's making good contact, I will say.
Sure, he is. But I'm not talking about it. I don't have anything to say about it. It hasn't happened. It's fine. Look, let's give our friends at the Giants radio station of choice. Oh, I don't know if it's their flagship or if it's their WFAN, but like,
what is it? Did we find out?
95.7 The Game.
Oh yeah.
Sure. That's what the station is, and they're
The Game.
Bay Area Sports Radio on the Odyssey Network. So in the same way that I listen to with the Six Rings postgame show, the Patriots postgame show after they lose on EEI or on the Sports Hub. The EEI, I believe. Like whenever the Patriots lose a heartbreaker, I'm like, well, let me open up the Odyssey app and listen to these clowns call in being like, our mystique is gone or whatever. I'm like, I want to hear these crybabies. I guess the equivalent in San Francisco is these fine folks on 95.7 The Game. EA Sports, it's in the game. I think no relation. But yeah, on prior to the opener of this series, The Game was feeling itself. Steiny from 95.7 The Game. Again, all these, do we have to be doing nicknames for radio hosts? Do I have to think that you're a
WFAN toddler
or a dog? Like, can't you have a name? Do
I really need C-Mac on WFAN?
But do I really need like Reginald and the Fart like anchoring my sports coverage? Like, can't just give me your name? Come on, enough with the codes. Steiny went on a rant about how gutless Aaron Judge was because he didn't want the pressure of Barry Bonds' shadow. That is early nominee for the 2024 Take Hall of Fame. Aaron Judge, of course, going back to the New York Yankees instead of the Giants. The Giants won the World Series in 2010, 12, and 14. I think they've already done a pretty good job of moving past Barry Bonds. Correct me if I'm wrong. How can there possibly be even an eighth as much legacy pressure in San Francisco as there is in New York when Judge was basically promised the captaincy on the verge of being elevated to the highest of Yankees mountaintops, but without that championship, standing alongside Don Mattingly is the only captain of the captain's convention. You look at each other and go, yeah, we couldn't get it done. We couldn't get shit done. Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle's ghosts looking at him from heaven going, I'm disappointed. He's gutless for not choosing the Giants to live up to the legacy of Barry Bonds, who won nothing and was juiced. We love Barry Bonds, but he's title free and he's basically just known for tearing the record books apart with his bare muscle hands. So to even act like there's a legacy to live up to there, I mean, Barry Bonds is always going to be the number one Giants offensive player of all time. You can't catch him. You can't hit 770 home runs. So moving on, the Giants were feeling themselves on 95.7 The Game before the series. They were ready to show Judge what he was missing and that he was gutless or whatever. Yeah. Then Judge ripped their hearts out. Then all the rest of the Yankees did too. They go ahead and sweep. Juan Soto homers for the difference in the final game. cut to 95.7, the game's Twitter feed, a zoomed in. This is how far the radio station fell between game one and game three. A zoomed in video of Juan Soto homering, bat flipping, with the caption, "Anyone notice Soto's aggressive bat flip? I saw it. We all saw it. Let's cry about it together. You go first." But even worse than the wimpy tweet, it was tweeted at 8:51 p.m. Eastern. The game ended at 6:30. You're still tweeting about Juan Soto bat flips 2 hours after the postgame? You went from bravado Aaron Judge's gutless, "The Yankees are wimps, come and take it from us, we are big, strong San Francisco," to "They shouldn't have been so mean to me when they threw the bat very high in the air 2 hours after the game ended." I guess I should add the game and Steiny and butt crack and you know, big flaps or whatever your nickname boys are to my wine rotation. I guess I should have listened to you guys after you lost the Super Bowl this year. I guess there's good stuff on 95.7 The Game. I don't hate San Francisco, but now I gotta tune in because I got a new wine rotation going on out there on the West Coast.
Hey, look, we know the business. We're in the clicks business.
I knew the Bay Area was known for their wine. I didn't know it was of the verbal variety.
the clicks business is a tough one. There's a fine line, and you got to work hard to get those page views and get that recognition, but we can't be over the top like this, guys. Come on. Jeez. I just laughed because I pictured, Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle as Marley and Marley from the Muppets Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, that's the pressure Judge is under right now. I don't see that in San Francisco.
But yeah, I mean, that's a crazy take. Like, oh man, Barry, there would have been, I feel like Barry Bonds is like not forgotten in a sense, like in terms of the fans loving him, but his accomplishments and like his looming legacy.
It's a little Pete Rosie. Really, like, yeah. Is anyone in Cincinnati right now going, Ellie De La Cruz has to live up to Pete Rose's legacy of greatness? Absolutely fucking not. Yeah. So why would this be talked about?
Yeah, it's like actually a really good gutless way. If Aaron Judge wanted to be gutless, he would have went to San Francisco because he would have been like, hey, like Barry Bonds, everything's an asterisk, so I don't need to hit 770 home runs now, do I? Barry Bonds never won a World Series. So that's enough. It's not a big deal. Yeah. So we're going to turn the tables on you. You guys are gutless. Sorry.
You're gutless. You became gutless. You started the series with guts, and you ended it gutless by the end, being
you
like,
had no idea.
First game of the series, big, you know, jacked up energy. Like, let's show Aaron Judge what he's missing. Third game of the series is, I checked the MLB rule book, and rule 21.1.4b says no bat flip should be over 6 feet in height. So like, okay, cool.
What was the caption on the tweet? It was like, did anybody notice this aggressive Juan Soto?
Yes, did anybody notice Juan Soto's aggressive bat flip? And the answer is literally everybody did. And it was,
I actually didn't. I did not see it until this morning. I kept watching the ball fly off the bat, and I was finding myself like looking at the replay of the ball sailing into the deepest part of the ballpark.
Yeah. We're lucky we got video of the bat flip. I mean, maybe it's a situation like the Carlton Fisk home run. We only saw him waving it fair because a rat got on the cameraman's foot in the Green Monster, and he was just panning because he didn't want to cut away because he had a rat on his foot. Maybe there's a rat in San Francisco, and maybe that's why we have great footage of Juan Soto's bat flip instead of following the path of the ball. I don't know.
Gutless. I didn't see it, so I guess I don't know.
This is a non-gutless podcast, I would say, overall. Gut-filled.
Yeah, we have guts. Yeah.
The Yankees are going to get a gut check in June. It's important to note that a good thing they're hot, good thing they've banked the wins they've already banked, because we do have showcases galore coming up. Twins this week, starting tomorrow. The Yankees usually handle their business against the Twins, but that doesn't mean the Twins aren't good. Dodgers coming in this weekend at Royals, at Red Sox. The Red Sox have the lineup of a team that should be 30 games under 500, and they're right about at 500. So I've had enough Red Sox complaints for this century, considering they're overperforming their talent level by leaps and downs, as they always do. So can it, Boston, enjoy the NBA Finals? I'm sure you'll have something. I'm sure at some point Kyrie will do something, and you'll, you know, claim that the world is ending because he stepped on a Lucky Charms box or whatever. Enjoy that. And then the O's – coming to Yankee Stadium, finally, much needed. And then the Atlanta Braves. So you want to be the best. You have the best record of baseball right now, half game up on the Phils. You basically have a month of games against the league's elite right here, and then the schedule gets easier again. At least they're not starting it in a hole. They're starting it from position of power. Tough series over and over and over again. None of these teams are going to give you a break. All these teams are going to throw their best at you, and the Yankees have shown through 2 months they can handle that. They can handle the punches. And they have endless opportunities to continue to show that. Or if you do have a tough series, a rare one, come right back from it. Another big series right around the corner. So big month, and kind of set up the way you'd want it to be after a bunch of wins. So yeah. You could be like, all right, great. We've got a bunch of challenges here, and we're not treading water and we're not desperate. Let's see what it looks like when we face the Dodgers at home. Let's see what it looks like when the Orioles come into Yankee Stadium for the first time this year. Let's impose our will. And if we don't, hey, you know what? You're starting in the catbird seat. But if they do, hey, you got a lot of opportunities to make yourself look good this month.
They did exactly what they needed to do. They prepared themselves for this stretch, whether it was building up the courage and the gumption to deal with this type of adversity, or at the most minimal, you know, at the bare minimum here is they have won enough games at this point to absorb some sort of a swoon. I don't think that's going to happen because they're playing too well right now. And again, this is professional. Like, they haven't had a cupcake schedule so far. Like, the Padres are good. The Giants were on a heater before we ran into them.
Remember how they started their season? Yeah. At Houston, at Arizona, the Jays. Like, the Yankees have been dealt blows for a lot. We didn't know Houston was going to struggle this much, but also Houston's obviously still good. Played we didn't Houston know Arizona again. Was going to struggle this month, but they're also obviously still good. So we didn't – I mean, look, we thought that would be a tougher stretch than at Royals, at Red Sox. I don't know if it ultimately will be, but it's not like the Yankees haven't been challenged already. That's a tough West Coast swing. The Angels are the Angels, but they always beat us in Anaheim. And the Padres are a wild card spot right now, and the Giants threw three elite pitchers at us in that three-game set. We took them all. So, yeah.
I mean, the schedule wasn't easy early on. You open the year, like you said, Astros, Diamondbacks, then you go right into a tilt with the Blue Jays, get a little break with the Marlins. Guardians at the time were the best team, and they had the best record, right?
And they're right behind the Yanks right now.
Yeah, right behind the Yanks right now. Then you go to the Blue Jays, you got the Rays, break with the A's, Brewers, NL Central leading team, Orioles, hardest series of the year, Tigers had a great April, Yankees took them down a peg, Astros came back. Rays again. I never discount division games at any point because it doesn't matter. Never matters. Twins, White Sox, and then this stretch has been. It hasn't been easy, and now it's about this schedule really doesn't let up at all until you face the Mets for two games. But then you have Blue Jays, Reds, Red Sox, Rays, Orioles, Rays, Mets a little again for a little bullshit stretch. Red Sox, Phillies, Blue Jays. Then you break, I guess, a good homestand with Angels, Rangers, and then you go and hang out with the White Sox in mid-August. So that's it's baseball, long season. To me, it doesn't matter who you're playing. Yeah, you want to avoid gauntlets, but this team is well prepared for them. So again, not concerned.
No, it's funny. There's supposedly just a number of teams these days that aren't trying, and there's no parity, and there are the haves and the have-nots. It feels like the Yankee schedule is just like a bunch of really good fucking teams in a row.
Yeah.
But we're in a position to enjoy it, and you should certainly be enjoying this season. You know what the deadline has in store for you. You know what they need. You know October matters, but hey, pretty non-gutless stuff from the 2024 New York Yankees. And we enjoyed almost every second of this weekend. Even when it looked like they weren't going to pull through on Sunday, it just made the victory that much sweeter. We will see you again on Thursday, 2:00 Eastern, as always. Next week, we'll be streaming on Monday. Then I'm away for a while. Thomas, I don't know what your plans are. Solo, absolutely just rambling streams. Are you going to get a puppet co-host? But either way, we're not going to go anywhere.
Should I think about it?
Yeah, I don't know. Time to maybe think
about it. Crowdsource.
I'll see everybody at the end of the month, but we're back like normal on Thursday to recap what's going on in the Twin Series. I'm Adam Weinerb. You can find me on Twitter for a little while, probably. They're allowing porn on there now.
Porn! So
might stick around even longer if you catch my drift. Just kidding. Now watch porn on Twitter. But I'm at Adam Weinerb on that platform. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
I am at porn Tommy's, no, I'm just kidding.
Tommy's rebranding his entire account to just pornography.
At porn account. I'm at Tommy's underscore takes. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for reading. Please make sure to head on over to yanksgoyard.com. We got plenty of content there for you. Also on Twitter, X, whatever. Yanks Go Yard, official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account, at Yanks Go Yard FS. We are there. We're hanging out. We're talking. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Yanks Go Yard. Very simple stuff. Make sure to use our promo code when you're heading over to Caesars. If you're a first-time user, new user, whatever you want to call it, or you have a family member, friend, your wife wants to get into gambling, your significant other, I don't know. YGY1000 is the code. Risk-free bet up to $1,000. Pretty awesome. Other than that, off day today, kick back, relax. That's a, 7-2 road trip. Pretty friggin' good. Twins tomorrow. And then somebody over the weekend. I'm not looking that far ahead because you know why? Living in the moment.
Yeah. I don't know the name of the team we're playing over the weekend. I don't know any of their players. I certainly don't know if a $325 million ace, who's also a rookie who pitched in a different professional league last year, who was given a New York Yankees jersey and decided to throw it in a trash can, is slated to start on Friday night. That's certainly not something I know.
It'd be interesting.
I won't be thinking about that at all, but if that were to occur, it would be something interesting. They have an off day. They might rejigger things. It might be Saturday. It might not be in this series at all, but that could be a moment. That could certainly be a moment.
That would be gutless.
Yeah. If the Dodgers could, in fact, do – oh, again, Dodgers. Sorry for mentioning. I don't actually know what team it is. It could be the Dodgers. It could be the Sonoma Stompers. Could be the Trenton Thunder. But a team coming in and doing that over the weekend would be fairly gutless if that were to happen. It's kind of a shame for the Giants radio guys, too. You got a gutless team in your own division who's your own rival. You should be focusing on their gutlessness instead of going in on Aaron Judge and the New York Yankees and Barry Bonds and Orlando Cepeda or the legacy of – I don't know. Pat Burrell and his golden thong or whatever. Just keep your takes to yourself. Plenty of World Series in the Giants' recent coffer. Let the Yankees have Aaron Judge. And they let you have it over the weekend. So pretty impressive. We will see everybody on Thursday. We'll be right back here. Hit subscribe if you haven't. Thanks for joining us today. If you didn't, not sure how you heard that. But shout out to you for having amazing ears. We will see everybody on Thursday.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.